Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But if the giant bubble is in search of a payment, it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. They're real clients. They're banking clients. They're trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. And again, I am Peter Schiff. I'm president of Euro Pacific Capital, and I am your host for the next hour. I'm doing the show live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can hear it on my website at www.europac.net, EROPAC.net, and also on shortwave radio. You can hear it on 5.07 megahertz. On a short way. Again, I invite your calls, your comments. The lines are open. The number to call, hopefully, is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Well, a lot's been happening, I guess, since the last week. Probably one of the big things that happened, of course, is the Dow traded through 14,000. And, you know, there's so much euphoria surrounding 14,000. You know, I haven't, you know, really called the top of the market. I've conceded that the market could go higher, but I've still encouraged my clients to invest elsewhere. And, you know, even though the U.S. stock market has, year-to-date, produced returns that are probably a little bit above inflation, just barely, the returns in the U.S. market have been dwarfed by the returns abroad, which are staggering. You know, and I know this too, if I talk to my clients, as I often do every day, and when I tell them what their accounts are worth and the balances, I mean, people usually react like, oh my God, really? That's what my accounts are? You know, because what's happening abroad, it makes the domestic markets look like they're standing still. But, you know, there's still so much euphoria around the Dow 14,000 that, you know, maybe this is a sign, that the market could be turning lower. You know, one thing I've never seen in the years that I've been doing this, I've never seen so many of my, you know, critics, my debate opponents on Fox or CNBC, saying such harsh things about me, or being so critical in writing things on their websites or sending out emails, telling everybody how wrong I've been and how foolish people have been for listening to me. And, you know, they point to Dow 14,000 as some kind of evidence that everything I've been saying has been wrong. And, of course, the Dow 14,000 doesn't disprove anything that I've said. You know, everything that I've said is happening in spades in the U.S. economy. And, of course, my investment recommendations, which nobody gives me credit for, none of my critics, I mean, anybody who's followed the investment advice of my critics, who are crowing and talking about how right they were because the Dow's at 14,000, nobody following their advice has had anywhere near the success as the people following my advice. And I don't even know if these guys know that. I mean, can they really be that dense? Do they really not even pay attention to anything that I'm saying, you know, when they're on these terminals with me? But I think the fact that so many of these guys are jumping all over at me and so quick to say how wrong I've been and what a fool I've been and how Dow 14,000 vindicates everything they've ever said, that the U.S. economy is fantastic and the U.S. market is great, I don't know, things look a little bit frothy. And when you have things like Amazon coming out today and their earnings beat and, you know, the stock is up, you know, 15% or 20% on the day, 25% on the day, Apple is trading overseas today, after hours up 10%, I mean, adding $10 billion in market cap because they beat their number. The market is acting kind of euphoric, and I think some of the shorts, maybe there's some short covering there. But meanwhile, you know, the number of 52-week lows, I mean, all the financials, I mean, now we're going to talk about that in a minute, but the home builders, the financials, these companies are just getting the living daylight is beaten out of them. So beneath the surface, beneath these spectacular gainers, there's a lot of weakness in the market. Of course, the big news in the market happened this week. The dollar index traded to its lowest level since I've been a stockbroker. We did trade below 80. We finally closed below 80 yesterday. Now, today we had a pretty sharp rally in the euro, in the dollar against the euro in particular. And so this is probably a knee-jerk reality. We went below 80. We stopped some people out. I think this is a head fake. Whether we build on this rally a little bit, it's possible. I mean, it's possible the dollar index could trade back up towards 82. But we'll see what happens on Friday. Friday we're going to get the jobs numbers. And here's a chance for the market to get disappointed. And I have a feeling that that might happen because everybody is talking about how great these GDP numbers are going to be for this next quarter. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know why everybody is so optimistic on this big rebound in U.S. GDP. So, I think that the market could be disappointed. And that could really result in the dog getting clobbered at the end of the week and closing the week, below the 80 level. And I tell you, it'll look ugly if that's the case. Meanwhile, the Bank of New Zealand came out overnight, raised interest rates to 8.5%. They did signal, they said that this is likely to be the last rate rise of the year. They think they've done enough. We'll see what happens. But a lot of real negative things are happening in the market that everybody is ignoring at the Dow 14,000 party. And, of course, we did have a pretty big sell-off yesterday. The Dow was down 220 points. It's up about 68 today. But it dropped a lot yesterday. And I think what happened was a little dose of reality, although the market is still delusional. But the news that came out yesterday, and again, it validates another thing that I've been saying, right? And very few people give me credit for this again in television land. But Wall Street has been operating under this delusion that subprime is a problem that's contained. And that's the word everybody uses, from the Secretary of the Treasury to former Fed Chairman Greenspan to every Wall Street analyst. Whenever I hear them talking, the code word, the buzzword is contained. The problem is contained. Contained like a sieve. But they say it's contained to subprime. And I've always said, no, it's not. The subprime is the tip of the iceberg. But there's a huge problem beneath the surface that extends way beyond subprime. Well, the news that came out of Countrywide yesterday, which was the largest home mortgage lender, was that their earnings were going to be down sharply because of delinquencies in their prime loans. Their prime loans. Not their subprime loans, but their prime loans. And stock was down to a new 52-week low, and that maybe got a few people to worry about, wait a minute, there's all these delinquencies in their prime loans, and I think more and more people have to start to realize that this is a bigger deal. The number of people who are dismissing or shoving under the rug these problems in the housing market, there's an article on my website today about the fact that in California, the number of foreclosures is the highest in history. And the only time period that's close to it is 1994. And the article I read was trying to contrast that period to then and trying to say why it's not as bad now. And this was their reasoning, and it was completely, backwards. They basically said that in 1994, real estate was going down because of all the job losses, because of the aerospace slowdown. And that right now, real estate is going down, but the economy is good. The unemployment rate is still low, so therefore it's not as bad. Now, my thinking is, it's actually the opposite. If we have all these foreclosures now, right, without any unemployment, with the economy still good, imagine what it's going to look like when it's in a recession. See, that's what these guys in California don't understand, that the recession is coming. And one of the reasons that it's coming is because so much of California's economy is itself tied to the housing market, either home construction, mortgage lending, or remodeling, and that the recession is coming. And so if we've got record high foreclosures now in the good economy, imagine how much worse it's going to get in the bad economy. The fact that things are good and the foreclosures are this bad is not something that the Los Angeles Times should be touting as something that we should be celebrating. This is like, oh my gosh, imagine how much worse it's going to get. You know, it's just amazing how these guys are trying to make lemonade out of all these lemons. Anyway, I now want to take a quick shift to the phone. I've got Daniel on the line from one of the ground zero points of the housing bubble in Naples, Florida. Go ahead, Daniel.
Good evening. This is one of your many fans.
Thank you.
Thanks for putting up for all the abuse on CNBC.
Oh, no problem. I actually get a kick out of it.
I think they should put up those indexes adjusted for the USDX. Otherwise, the measure of measure is a moving target. It's amazing they don't get your point on that. What I wanted to talk to you about tonight is that in the 1970s, if people took Main Street's advice, they would have done extremely poorly in their investments. And if they took the advice of people like you and bought oil stocks and gold stocks, and back then, actually, real estate did quite well, they would do quite well until 1980, and then a recession came, and unemployment in the country went to about 12%, and everything went down. Oil stocks, gold stocks, real estate. What I'm worried about is that everything will go down once the chicken comes home to roost and the scenario unplays, as you say it will. I know you think that foreign markets will do okay, but I'm not convinced.
Yeah, well, you know, that's something that I've had a lot of people argue with me about. Now, one of the things that I think is going to go down the most is the U.S. dollar. I mean, if things play out the way I think, I don't see how there's any way that the dollar can escape from this without going down a lot. So if you want to be out of the market, you also have to be out of the dollar. So you can't be in U.S. currency. So the question becomes, do you want to own foreign stocks? Do you want to own foreign bonds? Do you want to own cash, foreign cash? And I've come down with a middle point that I think is the best scenario, which is mainly conservative dividend-paying foreign stocks, which I think give us the best of both worlds. They give us better yields, current yields, than cash deposits or bonds. But they're also not highly speculative-type stocks. I mean, they can certainly go down. But when you concentrate on utilities and property trusts and refineries and pipelines and basic material industries and you know, basic things that have been around that take good dividends, there is some downside risk. But I think the upside potential outweighs it. Because I'm also cognizant of the fact that money supply is growing by about, 12 to 15% around the world. And I'm not a big fan when central banks are printing money like crazy. I'm not a big fan of holding on to their fiat. I would rather own real things, real assets, where the earnings can rise to offset the loss of purchasing power paper money. So I'm much more comfortable owning these foreign stocks. And the fact of the matter is, how I had the opinion, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, to not be invested at all, to just be in cash, my clients wouldn't have anywhere near the amount of money that they have today. And I don't know if we have another 6 months or another 6 years. I'd be surprised if we can make another 6 years. But you know what? Nothing's impossible. And I'm not going to tell people to just sit in cash and accept, minuscule or return when there are better returns abroad. And the second part of it is I still believe that ultimately, and maybe this is not going to happen immediately, but ultimately I think the best thing that can happen to the global economy is for the U.S. economy to collapse. Because I really believe we're dead weight. We're not the engine, we're the caboose. And the rest of the world is dragging us around. And if they severed it, the train would move faster. The world would be better off if America really had a vibrant economy where we produced and we contributed like everybody else. But if net, we're just consuming more than we produce and borrowing more than we save, we are a drain on the global economy. We are a drain on the real productive economy, and the rest of the world has to carry us around on their backs. And I think when they stop doing that, it's going to be a big improvement. So even though there might be some kind of temporary downturn in foreign stocks, I think that over time, they're going to benefit. And I think the dollar is going to be the biggest casualty. So even if, we're invested in foreign stocks and those stocks go down 20 or 30%, if the dollar goes down 50%, my clients aren't going to notice the difference. They're not going to notice that anything. They're going to see their accounts going up. economy.
Right, although in a recession and with the global economy, and you know, you still wonder if
yeah, but remember, the global economy is booming right now, and the U.S. economy is, I think, already in recession. I mean, remember, if you measure the U.S. economy in any other currency, the euro, the Canadian dollar, the Australian dollar, we're in a recession right now. Our economy is shrinking. But the rest of the world's economy is booming. And remember, if the dollar collapses, right, that's the same thing as everybody else, you know, having a pay raise, having their savings worth more. So let's say the dollar lost half its value. That would basically mean that incomes in every other country would double. Now, don't you think there would be a boom in the global economy if everybody in Europe had, you know, their income doubled? Or if the Chinese, maybe their income would quadruple? You know, I think that, you know, there's more and more purchasing power and wealth being created outside the United States.
If it happens,
that's what's going to get
you. If it happens gradually, yes, that's right. But if it doesn't happen in a smooth fashion, then what will happen is worldwide demand for commodities will go down and my holdings will...
I don't think so. I think that if all of a sudden the Chinese saw their value of their income just double or triple, they would want a lot more commodities, not less. I mean, when prices go down, you want more of it, right? The dollar going down is the equivalent of cutting commodity prices for everybody in the world except Americans. And when you put something on sale, you sell more of it. But again, you know, you don't have to have all your money in commodities. We have a lot of our clients' money. You know, we have a position in commodities, but the overwhelming bulk of it is not in commodities. It's in more conservative-type stocks that where the stocks are not a function of the price of the commodity. You should have some exposure to commodities. I'm very bullish on commodities, but you don't want to have your entire account in commodities by any stretch.
Right, but if you had followed your advice in the 70s, you would have done terrific. And then in 19...
Yeah, I don't know if I would have given the same advice in 1980. You know, in 1980, we had real interest rates. You know, we had interest rates, you know, what 18%? And that might happen now. I don't know, but that hasn't happened yet. I mean, so right now, we're still in the 70s. We're not in the 80s. And so the advice is still to stay out of U.S., stay in foreign assets, stay out of the dollar, stay in commodities. That might change. Maybe in 5 years or 6 years, maybe I'll change my advice and recommend coming back to the U.S. But that hasn't happened yet. We don't have our Paul Volcker. We don't have our Ronald Reagan. We haven't bit the bullet. We haven't had the severe recession like we had in 1981, 82. We haven't done any of that yet. Because another problem is, we're in much worse shape now. I mean, it's going to be much worse now than it was in 1980. We're in far worse shape.
Well, one of the problems is that the only investments that worked out in the early 80s were long-term U.S. bonds.
No, stocks worked out great. What are you kidding me? You could have bought the Dow. In 1980, you could buy the Dow for 800. It was at 800.
Well, it bottomed in about 1982, I think, at about 766 or something like that.
At about 800. And so, I mean, stocks did great. I mean, the yield on the Dow Jones is about 6% back then. So, I mean, you know, stocks and bonds were great investments, you know, if you bought them in the early 80s. You know, they were lousy investments if you bought them in the 60s or, you know,
right,
early 80s. But, and, you know, the Dow Jones might be a good investment again. We'll see. It's not now. I mean, I there's no doubt in my mind that at some point in the future, I will be buying U.S. stocks. I mean, I own some U.S. stocks now. I mean, I own U.S. oil stocks. I own some U.S. mining stocks. But I'm sure there'll be a point in time where I will buy your basic U.S. companies again. I'm just not buying now. There's much better values abroad, and I want to own companies. And in fact, all my critics who are criticizing me, at the same time they're criticizing me, they're still recommending global stocks, U.S. stocks, that do business globally because they want to tap in to the strength in global economies and rising foreign currencies. They don't even realize that what I'm doing is better than that. Instead of buying a U.S. stock that gets half its income abroad, I'm buying a foreign stock at a cheaper valuation at a higher dividend yield that gets all of its income abroad. So that's the best way to tap into the strength abroad. Have you read my book yet, Dan?
Yes, of course, and you make a number of these points, like the people on the island and the American wants to do all the eating and the other people have to go out and get the food.
Yeah, okay, great. Are you a client yet?
Well, I like to do my own investing, so I'm sorry I'm not a client.
You can still do your own investing. If you want to get access to a lot of these foreign markets, you can find better access with us than most other brokers.
The point that I'm trying to make is that these inflationary policies eventually lead to financial dislocation where all equities could get creamed inside and outside the United States.
Well, look, you got to own something. You got to own something. You know, we also own some gold and some silver. I recommend that. You know, you got to own something. You got to take your chances. You got to figure out where do you think you have the least amount of risk. And you have some diversification. But I can tell you, when if people are afraid, and they say, well, this might go down and that might go down, so they keep their money in T-bills or in muni bonds, that is a sure way to going bankrupt.
I think, I know you've appeared with many of the conferences, and you're probably familiar with Jay Taylor, who talks about his inflation deflation march. Are you familiar with him I'm talking about?
Well, yeah, I think so. Well, what's your point?
Well, the point is that at some point you're going to have to, it's going to take some fancy footwork as this unwinds. As the U.S. economy has to, as these imbalances, the trade balance, the deficit balance, the falling dollar.
How is it going to unwind? I don't really know for sure. All I know is the safest place to be is not invested in America. We have the big problem. And so if you're worried about how this is going to be unwound, great, but you've got to be in foreign assets. You can't be in U.S. assets. We're the ship that's sinking. See, what people tell me all the time is they say, well, what if your life raft also springs a leak? Can I get off this sinking ship, and I get on another ship, and it sinks too? Well, you know, the ship you're on is sinking for sure. So you might as well take a chance on another one that isn't sinking yet. Maybe it'll spring a leak, maybe it won't. But the U.S. ship is going down for sure. And so you might as well get off it. Anyway, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And maybe we'll be able to do business at some point.
Thanks a lot.
Let's take a quick break. I've got one caller on the line, but we probably have room for some more calls. The number is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. Take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back, and, oh, I got Tim on the line. I didn't realize he's calling from Iraq. Tim, are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, hello, Peter. It's Tim. I've got you. I'm a retired military and now working as a contractor in northern Iraq, and I'm already a client. I've been a client for about 3 months.
I wonder if
I read your export.
Do you have an Iraqi address on your account?
No, actually, I've still got a place back in the United States.
Yeah, that's good. I'm sure the Iraqi address would be a big red flag. You know, all this anti-money laundering and Patriot Act and all this crap we've got to do. It'd probably be like they'd probably be jumping up and down over there if we had a head count with something in Iraq.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I read your book, your excellent book, The Crash Proof, and I'm very much bearish about the U.S. economy and the U.S. dollar as well. I've just got a couple quick questions actually related to Euro Pacific itself now that I'm a client. As far as the funds that are held, I won't mention the name of a particular broker that I dealt with there, but I believe he told me that the funds were held at a New York bank there. And that, being as bearish as I am, what happens if the banks start defaulting in the United States?
I don't know. I mean, they've never actually happened. I mean, we have your funds. Bank of New York is a clearing firm. We're actually Pershing, which is owned at Bank of New York. But, you know, as long as you don't have a margin account and your stocks are in there, I mean, your assets are safe. They're segregated. They're not being loaned out. And so if the Bank of New York would have failed, I don't see how that would affect Pershing, which is a subsidiary. Now, Pershing could fail, theoretically. But, again, you know, your account is yours. I don't believe that your account would be creditors would be able to go after it. So I do think that it would be okay. I mean, sure, there's FDIC insurance for the first $500,000 in the Pacific, whatever that's worth, you know, but they, that could go bankrupt too. And a lot of your foreign stocks, of course, are custodied at banks outside the United States. The overall master account is at Pershing, but you know, to the extent that you have assets in Germany and in Canada and Australia and Singapore, those assets are custodied in banks in those countries. But you know, I don't know. I mean, people can say, is there a chance? I don't know. I mean, you gotta have your assets somewhere. I mean, I have my money at Pershing, and as bearish as I am, I have all my money there. So, you know, I'm not worried about it. I mean, there are things that I am worried about, but I'm not worried about, you know, Pershing going bankrupt and them going bankrupt and me losing my assets. I mean, that's just not one of the things that I'm concerned about.
Okay.
I think I'm more concerned about the U.S. government seizing my assets, which, you know, not because I've done anything wrong, but because they just might, you know, try to, you know, do that for the, you know, under the guise of a national emergency, saying the U.S. government needs to seize any foreign assets within its borders because it needs to use it, you know, to pay for the national defense or something. And it might see, you know, my foreign assets and, you know, and might say, ah, here's something we can grab, you know, we can use it to pay the soldiers, you know.
Right. Okay. My second question is, I have an offshore bank account with HSBC, and I have the advantage of being able to move my currency into, you know, transfer it from dollars to euros or to whatever. There's several of the major currencies that I
can. Well, do that. Don't leave it in dollars.
Right. And I'm wondering, I'm getting ready to
like
put some more money.
Just to have a currency account, I mean, the Swiss franc, I think, is undervalued. It's pretty low.
Right. As far as transferring money, my question is, as far as transferring some more money into Euro-Pacific to invest in some more foreign stocks, is there any advantage for me to transfer the money in as, say, euros or the Swiss franc?
Yeah, there probably is.
They
charge you a lot less to convert it to other currencies than where you've got it now. So that probably would be an advantage. And also, if you end up buying stocks, let's say, in euros, so if we're going to buy you some European stock and you already have the euros, you're much better off sending us the euros and letting us use those euros to buy those stocks, because then you won't have any currency transaction costs at all. And so that'll save you a little money. So what you need to do before you send the money, you need to contact your broker and get the wiring instructions, because each currency has a different wiring instruction associated with it. So you got to tell us what currency you're sending in, and then we'll give you the instructions as to which bank to have it wired so that it hits your account.
Okay, and so let's say years from now I was to pull out part or all of my investments. It's still going to come back to me in whatever currency I put in. If I put it in dollars, you're going to
have it. You can have any currency you want. I mean, we keep things in dollars because it's convenient and easier. But, you know, ultimately, if you have a European stock and you can tell me to sell it, you can say, you know what, I want my proceeds in euros. And then when we sell it, we won't convert the currency, and the euros will hit your account. If you say, no, I'd like it in dollars, then we'll convert it to dollars. But either way, let's say the euro has gone up, has doubled since you bought the stock. You're still going to get all of that gain, even if we convert it back to dollars to write you a check. But you're under no obligation to ever convert your asset back to dollars. You can sell it and take the euros, and I can wire the euros to your bank. You never have to see the dollar if you don't want to. But, you know, most of our clients use the dollar because it's so much easier. It's so much easier to understand. It's easier tax-wise. You know, when you sell stuff to take dollars. Because otherwise, you get extra capital gains. You get all kinds of extra bookkeeping nightmares when you introduce taking your proceeds and your dividends in other currencies. But it doesn't mean you can't do it. And if you have an IRA, it makes it a lot easier, so you don't have to worry about all those things.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. I appreciate it, and thanks for your time tonight. That's it for me.
Thanks for calling. What time is it there in Iraq?
It's about 4:30 in the morning here.
Okay. Well, good morning to you. Thanks for staying up late.
All right.
Up early. Oh, he's looking at it.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, we're
bye-bye.
Popular all around the world. Anyway, let me take a call a little bit closer to home. Gary over in Arizona. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, Peter. Fairly new client, new student of your way of thinking here. Just actually got some of my money over to you this week. I got two questions for you if you have time, kind of a micro and then a macro question. On the real estate side, as all these rumblings come in, I'm looking at my personal situation. I got a 30-year 5.5% fixed rate mortgage.
That's a great mortgage.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm struggling with. The mortgage is $200,000. My neighbors probably think, you know, these houses are worth $450,000. I bet if I priced it to sell, I could get out for $400,000, you know, $390,000. I'm thinking, if you were in that situation, what would you do? And the added fact is I have a free and clear $125,000 HELOC that I could just tap to invest versus sell, grab the proceeds and invest.
I mean, how much is your mortgage? Is $200,000. I mean, basically, you look at it this way. You can leverage the place up, borrow some more money, and invest that in foreign stocks. Or you can sell the place, pay off the mortgage, and invest the difference in foreign stocks.
Right.
You know, it's hard to say what you're going to do. I mean, there's a lot of social aspects of it and lifestyle aspects, and I don't know your situation, your house. I do know that that house is going to lose value.
Right.
I also know that the mortgage is going to lose value, and you're going to be able to pay it off with cheaper dollars. And so, you know, if you're going to stay there for a long time, the cost of staying there is going to go down. If circumstances require you to move, chances are, you know, if you sell that thing, the buyer can't assume that mortgage, so you're not going to get the benefit. Now, you can choose to keep it and rent it out, I mean, depending on how bad inflation is. But it's a tough call. I mean, if you really think you can get out, you know, at relatively near peak prices, I mean, it seems like it'd be a wise decision, you know, because then you can just, you know, invest the money in outside the United States.
Okay.
You know, if you borrow money to do it, especially, you know, you're not going to be able to get more money as cheaply as the mortgage you've got now.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly. And that was one of my thoughts. Okay,
definitely would not pay that first mortgage down. I mean, that would be my last thing. If I had any extra money,
right,
I definitely wouldn't pay off that cheap money. I would keep that mortgage and I would take that additional money and invest it in something that had a higher yield than 5.75%.
Right, exactly. Okay. Appreciate that viewpoint. Only other question I have, it seems like people like to try to bushwhack you and say, hey, we caught you being wrong on a prediction, and I you know, I don't know what the mentality behind that is, but in kind of studying your, you know, predictions and whatnot, one thing that you seem to be consistently a little premature on is predicting the decline of the Dow. And even as far back as 2002, you really kept expecting it to go lower. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to...
Well, it has gone lower in, you know, in anything that means anything. It's
right.
In terms of gold, it's lower in terms of oil, it's lower in terms of other currencies, it's way lower in terms of foreign markets. So I've always said that, you know, I think the market's going to lose value.
Right.
But it could go up. I don't know for sure. I've never recommended that anybody short the S&P. In fact, I argued against that again in my book. And when I go to these bull bear debates and somebody says, is the market going to be higher or lower in 6 months? I say, who cares? In terms of what? What I've said consistently is that the Dow is going to lose value relative to other things that you can own instead, relative to the cost of living, relative to other prices. I mean, if you look at what's happened to milk prices or egg prices or corn prices, the Dow hasn't kept pace with any of these things.
Right. So in terms of
the price,
as far as its pricing, you're not surprised if it continues to go up, though.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, I think it's going to cave in. But I just don't know exactly where. But you know what? It doesn't matter because, you know, I'm not in it. I'm not short. Now, I think, you know, some of the stocks that I've been most bearish on, like those related to the U.S. consumer, you know, they've done terrible. Look what's happened to all the retailers and the financial services and the home builders. I mean, these stocks are making 52-week lows.
Right.
And these home builders, all these stocks a year ago were at $70 and $80. Now they're all at $15 and $20. They're down 70-80%. People have been crushed in some of these stocks. The only stocks that are doing really well in the Dow are some of the stocks that I own myself. You know, I own a few of these Dow stocks that are making new highs because they're raw material stocks.
Right.
You know, when I look at the energy stocks that I own, you know, my biggest position, my biggest position I own for clients in an integrated oil company is Santos in Australia. And I own that myself. I also own Chevron, ConocoPhillips, those are big, you know, similar stocks in America. And I've got about a double on my U.S. oil stocks. But I'm a fivefold on Santos, right? And I can go across the board, different companies I bought that I did well of in the United States, but I bought similar companies in other countries, and they kicked butt on my U.S. stock.
Is that fivefold plus the currency gain or five?
No, that's including the currency gain.
Including, okay, right.
But I was buying that stock for $2, $2.50. Now it's at $12, $13.
Right.
The same time I was doing that, I was paying $40, 40 per Chevron for something like that, and maybe it's at 80 or 90, and it's nowhere near the return. Nowhere near.
Right.
But the main reason the Dow is doing well is because of all the earnings from all the inflation-sensitive, export-oriented companies that are in there.
Right.
Yeah, which has basically been my thesis all along, that there's a lot of inflation, that commodity prices are going to rise, that the global economy would be better than the U.S. economy. But, you know, I do tell people, stay out of the U.S. stock market. And people interpret that as meaning, aha, I'm telling people to just keep their money in cash and they're missing out on all these profits. No, I mean, that's only half the equation. In fact, I've had conversations with people on the phone where they tell me, well, I'm selling stocks and I'm going to buy cash. And I say, you know what, you're probably better off in stock. I mean, if somebody came to me and said, look, I'm going to keep all my money in the Dow Jones, or I'm going to keep all my money in cash or in a money market or bond for the next 5 years, you know, I tell them to go for stocks. That's how much I don't like bonds.
Right.
You know, I think the dollar is going to get killed. But fortunately, those aren't the only alternative. It's not U.S. stock or cash or U.S. bonds. There's a whole world of investments out there that you can pick.
Sure, right on.
And so I've constantly told people to invest in the assets that have done the best. I mean, every major macro call I've made has been accurate.
Right. So last question on that macro front, since we all can't make our living as stock brokers, if a significant economic contraction occurs domestic, what's your macro view of, as entrepreneurs, what the best, you know, business segments would be in?
Well, I mean, obviously, initially, the best businesses are going to be those that cater towards exports, those where we have a competitive advantage that we can export into wealthier foreign markets. Secondarily, it will be anybody who's working in some kind of field to help, bring about, you know, the profit from the adjustments that are going to take place internally.
Right.
The United States, as we move back from a service-oriented economy to a production and manufacturing economy again, as we move from a nation of borrowers and spenders to a nation of savers and producers, there's going to be a lot of problems, and obviously there's going to be people looking for solutions to those problems. We're going to be a much poorer country, but there certainly will be opportunities for people to make money. And
right.
We just need to figure out what those opportunities are and how to best position yourself.
Sure, I like that concept of exporting. That's brilliant. It's just going to be a flip, is what you're saying. It's a flip of what we're used to. As far as we've been the importers and the exporters, right? You know, we're overseas, and you're saying you see a flip of the table, which would go with everything else you've been predicting.
Yeah, it's just going to take time to do it. But, yeah, I mean, you're going to have to, you know.
Right. Okay, well, again, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call.
To bring some friends and family. I hope we haven't missed the whole train. I hope there's still a lot more upside on this.
But hurry up. Don't let it pull too far out of the station here.
All right, thanks.
All right, Gary.
Bye.
All right, quickly, let's hop up to David up in San Rafael, or San Francisco, California. Go ahead, David.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Good.
I can see how the dollar is going to be affecting these home prices. How about new construction? Are these... just going to be pretty much non-existent except for...
I've been saying that the new construction, the home building industry is basically going to go into hibernation for maybe 5 or 10 years or maybe more. I mean, the problem is they've already built too many homes, right? The last few years, they've built all the homes we're going to need for the next decade, maybe more. And there are a lot of people who already bought homes that really don't need them or they can't afford them. There's a lot of people with second homes and investment properties that they really shouldn't have bought. So there's a lot of property on the market. There's no need to build anymore. Also, I think in the coming economic austerity, you're going to see a lot of households destroyed. I think a lot of younger people are going to move in with roommates. I think a lot of kids, younger kids, will move back with their parents. I think a lot of elderly parents will move in with their grown children. I just think that there's, you know, more housing. That's one thing we have plenty of in this country is housing. And so we're not going to be building it. In fact, I think that because of inflation and how weak the dollar is going to be, the cost of building a new home is going to far exceed the value that you can get if you sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons that there's been so much home building is people could build a home for maybe $200,000 or $300,000 and then sell it for $400,000 or $500,000. The problem is in a few years, it might cost $300,000 to build a home, but you'll only be able to sell it for $200,000. So no one will build. I mean, you can just buy the ones that are already built.
What about other?
These home buildings are in trouble. Their business is gone. They're like internet incubators. You know, there are these companies like CMGI. You know, their business was incubating internet companies and selling them. Well, the minute the public wised up and didn't want to buy these money-losing dot bombs anymore, the internet incubators didn't have a business. you know, that's like a home builder.
What about other commodities like autos and wages and different things like that?
Well, I mean, in America, look, Americans aren't going to be buying a lot of new cars. You know, I mean, we're going to be making do with used cars for a long time. Now, we're going to be exporting a lot more cars. Sure, a lot more of the cars that we do manufacture that are new are going to be exported because Americans aren't going to be able to afford them. They're going to have to drive their used cars.
How about the people working there? Are they, what are their wages? What
do you think? Jobs. Look, they can still work. And look, right now, there's a lot of people in China who are making cars and not driving them. Right, there's a lot of people all over Asia that are riding bicycles to factories that are producing cars and they're shipping those cars to America. There's nothing that says that the shoe can't be on the other foot.
Okay. Well, I've been with you a couple of years now and everything's doing great. I've got my mother-in-law working with you and she's ecstatic. So you said you take care of her like your own mother, so I appreciate it.
I take care of every client like my own mother.
There you go.
I watch over every account. It doesn't matter which broker is working with them. I mean, I make sure that the clients always come first and that everything that we do is in the interest of the client.
Well, Jason down in Phoenix is doing a bang-up job. So,
okay, great.
All right,
thanks for the call, Dave. All right, let's take a quick break. I've got three more callers on hold. Let's take no more calls. I doubt I have time for any more. So we'll be back for the last three calls and the rest of the show after this commercial.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back, and I am taking phone calls. I am online with Robert from Florida. Go ahead, Robert. Robert, are you there?
Yeah. And I just wanted to do a couple of comments. I've read your book, love the book. I agree with you 100%. And I've transferred over about 75% of my life savings to you.
What about the other 25%?
I'm wondering about that. Jeff's got that little bit of apprehension, but I know he keeps saying, get out of the dollar, get out of the dollar. And I've been working with Danny out on the West Coast, and she is a true professional.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a nice lady, very professional, very prompt. And you keep saying that, get out of the dollar 100%. And, like, I've got some good performing mutual funds that have been doing well in the precious metals and everything. And
well, that's out of the dollar. I mean, if you have money in precious metals, that's not the dollar.
Oh, okay. I just keep it out of treasuries and...
don't want to have assets that are tied to the dollar, which would be, you know, obviously money markets, cash, any dollar-denominated debt. So even if you own, let's say you own bonds of a German company, but their obligations in dollars. You don't want that.
Oh, okay.
You don't want to own stock that generate most of their income in the United States because their earnings streams are in dollars.
Yes.
You want to have assets. So, you know, if, like, even if you own, like, some of the U.S. stocks that I own, like a Chevron, let's say, I don't look at Chevron as being a dollar asset. I mean, I own Newmont Mining. Newmont Mining is a U.S., but Freeport Backgrounds, Copper and Gold, is a U.S. company.
Right.
I don't regard that as having money in dollars. I look at it as having money in copper and gold.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, so you got to look at what the company does.
Okay.
They own. Where is their income coming from to try to determine whether that asset is dependent on what the dollar will buy?
Hmm.
Right. Like, you don't want to own, you know, you don't want to own a retailer in the United States because what are they doing? All they're doing is selling products to Americans for dollars. You don't want that.
True. Yeah. One of the other comments I'd like to make is I was a little apprehensive at first when I was talking to Danny. I asked her what the fees were of going with Euro Pacific, and she said roughly around 3% and this and that. So I was weighing it out, and I said, gee, do I really want to spend 3%? But I have to tell you, I started right about July 4th, July 5th, right after the holiday, and I've already recovered like almost 2.5% of the commissions and everything already. So I'm very pleased.
Well, I mean, I've had people, you know, the way the markets are going now, by the time the first month is over, they've already recouped the commission.
Yeah.
Remember, you know, Wall Street works on fees, and a lot of people charge annual fees. They charge 1.5%, 2% a year.
Exactly.
We just charge that fee one time. Now, sure, if we did a lot of buying and selling, it would be expensive. But we don't do that. All we do is buy stock and hold it.
Right.
I've got clients that I had 10 years ago that every stock I bought is still in their account. Maybe one or two of chains have been bought out or taken over or something. But
by and
large, the stuff that I buy, you know, you're going to pass away and your kids are going to get it.
Right.
It's a very low-cost way to invest. You're getting no capital gains taxes, no, you know, slippage as you're buying and selling. And we're just buying good quality companies. This is the Warren Buffett strategy of investing. Buy stocks and hope you never have to sell them.
Exactly.
And don't look at the price, collect the dividends. And if the dividends are coming from foreign sources, so what I'm really doing is I'm helping put together a diversified portfolio that you don't have to worry about, that's going to throw off dividends and help you get the stocks and help you get execution directly on these foreign markets and not have to go through with the spreads on the fees.
Right, exactly. And on your book, I've tried to give it to people and I try to talk to people about it and they don't want to hear it.
Well, you know,
your gloom and doom, this and that, the world's coming to an end, your Chicken Little and this and that, and I feel obligated to help these people, but yet, like, you always lead off force the water, but you can't make them drink.
Yeah, well, I'm not predicting the end of the world.
Oh, no, absolutely not, but they think I am, because I'm out of the dollar into foreign assets. And
well, look, I'm not even predicting the end of America. It's just the end of this phony economy, this phony lifestyle that we've been living.
Right.
So that's going to come to an end.
Yes.
And it's going to be a very difficult transition for a lot of people. And the real fabric of our country, because of this phony economy, the real industrial base has disintegrated. And that never would have happened had it not been for, you know, what's been going on. So it's a real shame
right.
It happened. But it's not, I'm not saying, hey, it's hopeless.
Oh, no.
We're all going to die.
Exactly.
But that's the way people can discredit me, is that, you know, what I'm saying is just by labeling me a gloom and doomer and say, you know, he's just a firm bear, don't listen to him.
Oh, I know. I think, like I say, on the major networks, and I have to keep laughing. It's sad. It's really sad. But, I mean, you're disclosing the whole thing, and they don't want to hear it. Don't want to hear it.
Bob, look, you do what you can do. I'm glad at least I was able to reach out and affect you, and now we're doing something to protect you. So.
Absolutely, and I thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Bob.
Okay, great. Bye now.
And before I go to these next two calls, there's one thing I wanted to definitely talk about. Just, you know, I don't know how many people saw this, but on the Kudlow show two days ago, he interviewed Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson. And he asked Paulson about the dollar. He said, you know, a lot of people have been talking about the weak dollar, and they're worried about it. They think it's a problem. Do you share any of those concerns? Are you worried? Do you think there's a problem with the weak dollar? That was the question. And you can see this interview on, you know, CBC's website. And his response, all he did is he immediately went into that canned response. Well, Larry, I just want to say that a strong dollar is in the interest of the United States. And we believe that exchange rates should be determined by the marketplace. That was it. Then they went on to another subject. Larry didn't ask a follow-up question. I mean, it's a whole ridiculous spectacle, right? I mean, because Larry Kudlow is saying, hey, the dollar is weak. Are you worried? And all he says is a strong dollar is in our national interest. Well, wait a minute. We don't have a strong dollar, right? We have a weak dollar, and it's getting weaker. Now, if he thinks a strong dollar is in our natural interest, but we don't have a strong dollar, we have a weak dollar, why isn't he concerned? And what is he going to do about it, if anything? You know, I mean, they don't even ask that. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like he's a captain, he's standing on a ship. The ship is sinking, it's taking on water. And Kudlow says, hey, are you worried that the ship is sinking? And he says, seaworthyship is in everybody's interest. It's in the passenger's interest. Yeah, but the ship isn't seaworthy. It's sinking. Aren't you worried? I mean, you got to see this thing. And also, of course, he asks him about the subprime, and he immediately says the subprime market is contained. He's got that word down. It's contained. You know, of course, the day before, these earnings came out from Countrywide, where they're having these huge losses in the prime loans. Anyway, Let's go to the last two callers. I'll be taking Andrew coming from Canada. Go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, hi, Peter. Yeah, just had a couple questions. The first question is, I'm just a little confused, I guess, with the way that gold reacts sometimes. Like, when you see the stock market going up sometimes, gold is going up along with it, and, you know, I hear there's a lot of liquidity out there, so people just want to buy everything, and then the stock market goes down, and, you know, gold goes down, which is the reverse of what you'd expect sort of thing. So I guess what that makes me wonder is if with the dollar, U.S. dollar getting close to 80, I'm wondering, like, for the cash portion of the portfolio, like, how much should be in foreign currencies, versus,
well, I still don't think it makes sense to move into the dollar, even at this low level for the dollar. But, you know, right now, gold kind of trades like an asset. It doesn't trade like it's any different than a stock or oil or anything else. But I think that's going to change. I think at some point soon, I don't know when, but I think at some point soon, gold, that relationship is going to change. And gold is going to trade opposite other assets. It's going to go up when the stock market goes down. It's going to be the flight to quality investment. It's going to be what everybody buys when they're selling other things. Right now, people are still buying treasuries. Treasury is still the beneficiary. U.S. treasuries and global foreign treasuries, you know, sovereign debt in Europe. And
yeah,
that's still where people are going when they're worried. That's not where they should be going. If they really understood the problem, they'd be going to gold. Eventually, they're going to figure it out, and they will go to gold. And at some point, it's going to break from this pattern, and it's going to go up, and it's going to go up when stocks go up, and it's going to go up more when they go down. But right now, it's not trading like that. And sometimes it's frustrating for people who are in gold, but all I can say is just be patient. You know, gold has done very well over the last 8 years, but it's going to do a lot better, I think, over the next 8 years.
Yeah, I have a little bit different perspective on cash than you, because I'm in Canada, you know, so.
Well, as a Canadian, you don't have that concern. The Canadian dollar is at 96, 97 cents.
Yeah, exactly. So it looks to me like when I'm buying gold, I'm going, okay, well, it's a choice between the Canadian.
Well, yeah, but yeah, you don't have as big a problem, because at least your currency is far sounder than ours, so you don't have as big a need. But I still think you have a need to diversify, and you still should own some gold.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, your ship is, you're not on a ship that's thinking like most of my American clients.
Okay, well, it's good for the time being.
Remember, I've been predicting. I predicted before the year began that I thought the Canadian dollar could eclipse the U.S. dollar in 2008, and that prediction looks like it might come true.
Yeah, it looks like it's a good short-term bet that Canada's really dependent upon the U.S. for trade, so I'm not totally comfortable with the situation anyways. But the other thing I'm wondering is just about with the International Energy Agency saying that basically in order to meet demand, we're going to have to use everything, like every commodity under the sun and, you know, sugar and corn and everything just to maybe meet demand. I noticed that sugar has been beaten up over the last year or something, just the commodity itself. What do you think of buying an ETF, sugar ETF?
Yeah, we're buying some of these ETFs that trade in London in individual commodities like sugar.
Good time to go in, eh?
One thing is going to happen that nobody is anticipating. You know where a lot of these resources are going to come from?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
it's going to come from Americans who stop consuming. You see, we use such a high percentage of the world's resources. That's going to stop. And so when Americans stop consuming so much, that's going to free up a lot of resources for the rest of the world. So they're going to get it, but it's going to come at our expense.
Okay. That's interesting. So, but even so, they're going to consume. You think the prices continue to go up because they just have all these extra newly.
But prices are actually going to go down. Ultimately, what's going to happen is commodity prices will go down for the rest of the world, and they'll go sky high for Americans.
Yeah.
So Americans will consume a lot less, and that will take care of the global supply and demand imbalance.
Right, because at the same time, the U.S. currency goes down automatically, their currencies go up, so they just buy everything they've been wanting to buy all these years or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. For a while, it was okay that we consumed all the resources. We produced everything. We were the richest people. But now we're not doing that. So it doesn't make any sense that we can just consume such a high percentage of the world's output when we're really not the main industrial economy anymore.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the call. I got one more call. I want to make sure I get to one. And the last caller for the day is John in the OC, California. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I just finished reading your book. I thought it was great. I'm a little bit younger. I'm about 24. Yeah, I just had some questions regarding, like, where I should be putting my money as far as my portfolio goes, if I should be putting more possibly in gold, just since
Well, I'm glad that you're 24 and actually have a portfolio. That's a commitment right there.
I'm trying to build it up while I'm still young, so.
Yeah, you know, gold is certainly a good place to go. Gold mining stocks, if I was 24 right now and I wanted to really make some money, I'd look at some of these mining stocks. I mean, if you know, you're young enough to take a chance that if you've got a small amount of money and you want to turn it into a large amount of money, you know, maybe you'll be able to buy a nice condo in a few years from your friends who are losing theirs to foreclosure. You'll be able to take cash for it with the profits from your gold stock.
Yeah, and like the previous caller, I do have some of my money in some, like, currency ETFs. I know I have some in, like, a Canadian currency ETF, and, yeah, I've just been trying to figure out, you know, what percentage I should be putting. Like, I don't know if I want to be putting too much into, you know, I hardly own any American stocks right now, but I know,
that's good.
You know, I've got about, like, 30% right now in gold, precious metal shares and so forth. I don't know if that's too much or...
No, not at all.
Go ahead.
Make these decisions on your own. You got to determine, you know, I mean, you're a young guy, you got, you know, you probably have a job, you probably, you know, I mean, you got a lot of things that you could do, but I mean, I would look at an opportunity to be heavily exposed, if I were you, to mining, to resources, and, you know, to things of that nature, and, you know, keep trying to, you know, lock away some extra money like you're doing. How did you hear about my book?
I've just been, you know, reading around on the internet and stuff, and I've heard a lot about this, about the dollar and so forth, and actually, a buddy of mine read something similar. I think it was called, like, The Great Bust Ahead or something. And, you know, I was browsing Amazon around and found your book, and it had some pretty good ratings for it. So I picked it up and really, really thought it was really good. So
last two reviews have been kind of negative on my book. I mean, most of them are 5 stars, so I could use a few words. If anybody's out there has read my book, you should go up on Amazon and write a positive review if you like the book. If you didn't like the book, then don't bother. But if you get a book and you want to give it a 5-star rating, and go up on Amazon and write something good about why you liked it.
And maybe it's some of these guys you're interviewing with on CNBC trying to get back at you. Who knows?
A few moles in there. They go in there and write some negative thing, you know, just to try to screw with me. You know?
Yeah, hacking into Amazon there.
But they don't have to hack in. They just go in there and you put up a review.
Yeah,
I don't know. Has anybody done this? I said this on my show. I don't know if anyone has ever done it, but I really would hope that some of my listeners, the people who listen to my show faithfully every week, listen to other radio shows, other call-in shows, call up. Ask people about my book. Ask the host. Ask the guest. Have you read Peter Schiff's new book, Crash Proof? You know, what do you think about the book? Oh, you haven't read it. What's it about? Here's his thesis. Here's what he says. You know, talk about the book, so maybe people will hear about it and go out and buy it.
Yeah, I've got my doors reading it back.
Howard Stern became so popular. People were calling up talk shows and just yelling Howard Stern on her.
Well, one other quick question. What do you think of, like, foreign energy plays?
I like it. I like
ENI and other.
I also like foreign alternative energy. You know, I just got a brand new research report, a special report on my website that you can download it on alternative energy. We're doing a lot of foreign alternative energy stock. And, yeah, I think the whole sector is a great place to invest.
Okay, yeah, I'll go ahead and take a look at that. Well, I appreciate everything you're doing. I'll try and spread that book around to some of my friends. So.
Yeah, thanks a lot, John. Thanks. Appreciate the call.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, okay, we're getting close to the end of the hour. It always goes by very quickly. I want to thank everybody again for taking the time to listen. If you have any friends that you think would benefit from this hour, you know, make sure to tell them. They can go to the website, www.europac.net, go to the archives, listen to the show, and if they want, you know, all the shows I've ever done are on there. If anybody thinks I've ever given out any investment advice that wasn't good, just go and play the shows from 2 years ago, listen to what I was saying, and think about where you would be right now had you followed my advice 2 years ago. Now, if you did follow my advice, you know where you are. But if you didn't and you want to put it to the test, just play the early episodes. Nothing has ever been edited. No shows have been left out. They're all there. Everything I've ever written is on my website. Nothing has been changed. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening again. It's www.europac.net. Call us toll-free, 800-727-7922. And if you haven't read my book, Crash Proof, go out and buy it, read it. You've got to do that. Thanks again. I'll be here again next week. Go on, everyone.